Welcome to Blue Collar BS, a podcast that busts the popular myth that we can't find good people, highlighting how the different generations of today, the boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z, are redefining work so that the industrial revolution that started in the U.S. stays in the U.S.
Welcome back to the Blue Collar BS podcast, the podcast that's been weathering more storms than a Midwest spring and still coming out swinging. I'm Brad, and with me, as always, is the man with dog poop in his trees and sarcasm in his veins, Mr. Stephen Doyle.
That's right, Brad. Today's episode is a wild ride down memory lane and into the generational trenches of the workplace. We're bringing in two absolute firecrackers, Becca and Jennifer, two women that you used to work with back in your Bucyrus days. Becca was your wizard of customer relations, and now she's a marketing maven. Jen, she was your most challenging hire, which are your words, not mine.
True. But let's be real. Challenging usually means they're smarter than you. And guess what? These two come in hot. We're talking Gen X, Zillennials, and all the chaos in between. Becca self-identifies as Gen X because, of course, she does. And Jen, well, she's got the spice and the sarcasm to rival the best of them.
So buckle up. This episode dives into what happens when generations collide in the workplace, the BS that flies, and how these ladies have navigated it all. It's smart, it's funny, and yeah, it gets a little spicy.
Don't miss it, because if you're still blaming everything on Gen Z or boomers, this episode might just slap you into some perspective. So let's go.
Welcome back to Blue Collar BS, Brad. How you doing today, my friend?
I am wonderful, Mr. Stephen Doyle. And how is Detroit Motor City today?
You know, last night we actually had tornado warnings.
We had actual tornadoes here in Wisconsin last night.
Yeah, in the middle of the night. I was actually really surprised. We actually did go to shelter in place. So that was kind of cool. Not done that before.
All your trees survive?
The woods did survive. I didn't have to clean up anything in the yard. So that's fantastic, other than the dog crap. So, you know,
perfect.
It's been a good day so far.
Did you do it well? Did you do that?
Any job worth doing is worth doing well, Steve.
You know that.
Oh, right? I do that phenomenally. I mean, I do it so well that my daughter actually realized that there was poop hanging from the branches in the woods. That's how good I do it.
That is a whole nother show.
It is a whole nother show. So Brad, who do we have on the show today?
So on the show today, we are blessed to have two former colleagues that I used to work with back in the day at Bucyrus, who we have Becca and Jennifer. Becca worked with us at Bucyrus in customer relations and special e-business, and now she's in marketing doing all sorts of things that Jen has no idea what the hell she does. And then I have Jennifer, maybe, who is my most challenging hire. I shouldn't say most challenging. I will go with most challenging hire.
I think that means my career process. You're his favorite.
And it worked out well for both of us. I will say that. So welcome to the show, Becca and Jen. How are you guys?
Wonderful. Thanks for having us.
Yes. Wonderful. Thank you for having us.
That sounds so canned.
I know.
Really? Really, the pre-show was a lot more spicier than this. So before I forget and we get into the spice throwing of Brad, which will be great. Becca and Jen, which generations do you guys identify with?
So I was brought up as a Gen Xer, but apparently now I'm considered a millennial.
Not considered now. You always have been.
Well, no, whenever it changed, because I remember being in school being told I was a Gen X.
They lied.
But there's also this magical Zillennials I've heard about that's like this little 10-year bucket where I think I fall more into. But, I mean, I identify as a Gen X. Can I say that?
Yeah.
Sure,
you can. You can.
I self-identify as a Gen Xer.
Steve tries that all the time.
No, we are. We is be Gen X.
Well, all right, Jen. Your signature, Becca, so we know.
Okay.
right next to your pronouns.
Right. Well, I have no pronouns, but maybe I'll add in the I identify as Gen X.
There we go.
All right, Jen.
I am Gen X through and through. However, I will say My father was born in 1933, so I was raised quite a bit differently. My parents were a lot older than most of the people that in my age group, basically, mm-hmm. or the people I went to school with. So I'm a little different, I think.
No shit.
Yeah.
You heard her say it, Brad.
Yep. You got it right here.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Different is an understatement.
Yeah.
Challenging would be a good word, too.
I am challenging. That is for sure. Yep.
That is amazing.
There were no trophies for participation in my family. If you're up, you're in the game.
I love that. I absolutely love that. So tell us about a little bit. So obviously our listeners know you guys have some affiliation with Brad in your past lives. Tell us a little bit about that and then kind of where you're transitioned to now. Yeah, we're going to go down that path and it's going to be memory lane and I'm going to love this.
Should we start like easy with me or have Jen just go for it?
Oh, let's go easy and then we'll get into the blast fest.
A slow roll into it.
Yeah.
Okay. So Brad and I worked together in the aftermarket parts side of the business at Bucyrus. We didn't do a lot directly with each other, but I think I worked probably more with this colleague. So then Brad and I usually probably just got to joke around more than anything else. And then the infamous disaster outings is, you know, really built the strong bond with me and Brad, as well as the other BC family members.
Golf and alcohol.
Yep.
Right.
Always a great combination.
Right?
Yeah.
See, that was easy. Now
that was easy. All right. All right, Jen.
Teared up a little bit.
All right.
I like the clearing of the throat, by the way.
I actually remember where I was standing when I first talked to Mr. Herda. He called
Mr. Herda.
Yes. He called to offer me a job in subcontracting for Bucyrus. And I turned down what he was offering salary wise and told him what I wanted and that I was worth it.
Wow.
Was he worth it, Brad?
Fact was, but then, so here's the rest of that story, right? The rest of that story goes, okay, great. So we're in this very male dominated industry back in the mining days, right? And it was not, there were very few women outside of administrative roles or HR or finance, right? It was pretty much very much male dominated, particularly when Jen was starting. So I had to go back to my director and say, okay, great, and fight for the opportunity because it was a great interview. It was, things were there. Jennifer has the knowledge, the skills, and the ability to do the job. But the folks that were holding the purse strings were not excited about what needed to take place to move forward. So I had to made the fight and made sure that she understood that, hey, I can do this. But at the end of the year, when you get like zero raise, no, because you're maxed out. We are going in at the ceiling. So be prepared and be ready and don't get pissed at me when something comes by later on. So don't get pissed at me. And we made it work and it was awesome.
When was that? What year was that?
Oh, man. 2005
or 2006.
2005 or 2006. Yeah. So, yeah, my interview with Brad was a really good interview. And I knew that he was going to challenge me. And I also knew that I wasn't always going to get along with him.
All right. So
but in a good way.
So I mean, holy shit. It was 2000. Well, let's see here. Let's see. Did you change it? Did you put any extra stuff in there? No, it says 07 on it says 07 on your LinkedIn profile. I don't think that's right.
No, I don't think that's right either.
All right, Jen, so help clear something up for me. So you just mentioned that as you were going through the interview process, you knew it was going to be tough to work with Brad.
That's not what she said. That's what you might have heard.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard. That's why I want a little clarification.
So what I meant by that, it would be challenging.
Okay.
Brad doesn't sugarcoat things.
No, he does not.
And I prefer, my personality prefers somebody that's going to tell you like it is.
Yep.
And that's one of the reasons why I think I've done well in the industries that I've been in, because there's not much sugarcoating in mining or heavy equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So, but
unless you're in marketing.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, we got fairy plums and lollipops that we have to kind of put on top of the pragmatic stuff sometimes.
No, Becca's cut from the same cloth as I am. She really is. So we're both pragmatic. But so Brad was different in the fact that I'd had bosses before that probably got to the roles that they were in, maybe not so much by knowing than maybe by status. I don't know if that makes any sense to you.
Personal power over title power.
Sharp, useless look about them type of thing.
So. Yep.
Well, I'm just being honest.
I mean, I would say we all know several people that would meet that
right
criteria.
Mm-hmm. There's one gentleman that comes right to the top of mind.
Oh, yeah.
Just one?
There's one for sure.
Just one? I love it. All right, excellent. So now that you're no longer working with Brad, tell us kind of where you guys are now, and then we'll get back to some stories with Brad. Like, where are you guys at? What are you guys doing? And then we're going to get back to Brad.
So I'm the director of marketing at Super Products. We make giant truck-mounted vacuums. Very mm-hmm. niche for anyone outside of this industry. But we make hydro excavators, so they compete with the traditional yellow diggers. We make sewer cleaners. So our customers really deal with like the dirty jobs, but they're important. And it's kind of fun because, again, it's different. So there's a lot to talk about when it comes to like what we do as a company.
All right.
And I am the director of materials here. So I oversee.
Director. Wow.
Oh,
look at, we're both look at directed, you,
Brad. We grew up. We're not little kids anymore.
Yeah. So I oversee the warehouse, cycle counters, production planning, and buying.
Okay.
So anything materials falls my way.
The good and the bad.
And it's a lot of, yeah, well, let's just, yeah. Yes.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Excellent. Go for it, Brad. What was your question?
So obviously you guys have both been in heavy manufacturing, right? It's not just stamped steel parts. Here's what it is. It's larger components, things that just don't fit in an envelope and they move around the globe. Also probably, again, very male dominated. How have your experiences been getting through the industry, and how are you seeing it different today than maybe what it was when you first got into those arenas two and a half decades ago?
So it's definitely changed, but I don't know that it necessarily changed because different roles. I mean, I'm a tomboy. I grew up with playing sports with two brothers and more friends with boys than girls. So for me, working with more men and has always been like a natural thing. Girls tend to get really catty sometimes. So again, it's always been like an easy fit for me to play into.
No, I know. Really?
Crazy. I feel as though maybe things for me seem a little more difficult now, but I think this is me getting older. When I was younger dealing with it, maybe like some of the older colleagues were nicer to me because they were trying to take care of me. And a lot of times, I would say pretty much at every one of the manufacturers I worked for, I've always had big brothers always kind of looking out for me. So I've never really had a hard time with it. I mean, I've definitely experienced sexual harassment, comments, maybe inappropriate advancements, especially in marketing. We go out to dinner. We're going to go out and have cocktails. But I'd say generally my colleagues.
This is why I leave the pool parties.
I don't think we were colleagues at that point, but that's probably always a safe idea, right?
That is true. When I, yep. There are some of those astro outings. I'm like, yeah, I'm out of here. I don't need to know. I'm gone. I wasn't there when it happened. I don't know. I can claim ignorance.
Yep.
But were there pineapples? Were there pineapples?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
Wow. All right. This All right, Jen, I like it.
Jen, you can go about your experience.
I'll be honest with you. I don't think it's gotten any better from a materials standpoint. Mm-hmm. I fight just as hard as I did when I was younger. The only difference is right now I'm a lot bitchier and I don't give a shit. So I'll let you have it type of thing. I guess it's just getting older and choosing your battles, you mm-hmm. know, but unfortunately you know, I still run across the salesman that, you know, I remember once when I worked for GE, I had to buy a new drying oven for SMT line. And I had a salesman come in and talk to myself and Lauren, who I still talk to. He was my boss at the time. And the guy sat down and talked only to Lauren, didn't talk to me. And the only time he did talk to me was to turn to me and say, you know how this works, right? It's like a great big cookie oven. And I remember looking at him.
Oh, my God. And you just didn't blow up at him at that point in time and say, fuck you, get out of here?
It's like a good throat punch moment.
Well, first I looked at Lauren because this was before the Bucyrus days. Okay. So I was 22
ish,
maybe. And I looked at Lauren and he could see that I was ticked. And Lauren just sat back and shook his head. And I turned to the guy and I said to him, well, you can leave now. And the guy looked at Lauren for confirmation. And Lauren's like, you heard what she said. She has the checkbook. Get out.
Well, I mean, kudos to that though, because he had it back.
Yeah.
And that doesn't happen all the time. So that was good.
No, I will say I have been fortunate, Brad included, that I've had bosses and mentors, seriously, that have looked out for me. Probably when they shouldn't have had to, but they did anyway. So Lauren was one of them. Brad was an advocate for me as well. But, you know, I still run into, you know, it's a male-dominated industry. I still run into a lot of challenges, but I'm a pragmatic person. Mm-hmm. So I'll beat you down with facts every day. So
did you take that from Brad?
I don't come at
it. No, they're her facts, anymore. Though. They're not the facts. They're her facts.
Oh. I want to see this. Say,
lucky you're not in that room with her.
I know. Now I want to see this. I saw the lasers and the throat punch coming.
No, it's always, you know, you can get emotional about anything, but, you know, the facts, you know, dollars and cents or facts and that kind of stuff will win at the end of the day every time.
Right.
So,
yep.
I think when you're younger, obviously you don't have that skill about you, or it's not refined. So when I say that, you know, I don't give a shit today, I do. I just approach it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and you have the experience of it, right? Like, it's not your first rodeo. It's not the first time you've experienced that with someone treating you that way.
I'm a professional bull rider, guaranteed, man.
There's truth to that.
Yeah.
You have gone to hell and back. There's no doubt.
Yep.
Multiple times for many different things. And I still remember when you went from the buying role into your leadership role in the purchasing group, and the first one of the first meetings that you went off to for the war room meeting, no more than 10 minutes after that meeting was over, before you were back in the office, I got a phone call from a person saying, hey, what's really going on with this job? I said, well, what did Jen say? He said, da-da-da-da-da, but is that right? I said, well, why are you asking me that question? Go talk to her. What she told you is what she told you. I trust that she's going to tell you the truth. Why are you asking me that question? Mm-hmm. And they were very taken aback by that. I'm like, I don't need to answer that question. That's your job. Go do your fucking job. Not my job to go do it. It's your job. Go handle it.
Yep. And I still run into it to this day. It drives me nuts.
So question on that for you, Jen. How are you working with like the younger generation to instill that more of that matter of factness that you have about you to help kind of break down the stigma that they're just kind of, you know, go take it, cry about it, whine about it aspect that they may have?
I struggle with it. I'm not going to lie, because there's a big percentage of me that wants to tell them, you know, let's pull up our panties a little bit, suck it up and get it done. You know, I pay you as a professional to do something. But I also believe that I have an obligation to work with people to an extent. I mean, you can lead a horse to water, right? There are some people that
she's got 2x4s and brooms back there. It's amazing.
I actually have a poker stick, and Becca knows that. It sits in the corner of my office. So, but
Just in case.
Just in case. So I'll give you a good example. You know, I've told people throughout my career, especially in a leadership role, I don't lie when I say my door is open. It is. But if you're coming in here with a problem, you better have some kind of a solution in your brain by the time you come in by me. I will not do your job for you.
Mm-hmm.
I won't do it. I will help you. I will help you and I will take away roadblocks. That's what I tell all my people, but it hits home more with the younger group, because if you want to grow, you have to take your own ownership and you have to learn. And me doing it for you, it's almost like raising a little child, right? You're going to do everything for your kid?
Yeah. Depends.
You're going to have a 40-year-old living at home with you. I don't know.
Well, and honestly, that's part of the problem, right? So Brad's, it depends, is there's a lack of accountability. A lot of these kids in the everyone wins a medal generation, they don't understand what it means to work hard for something. They think mm-hmm. someone's always going to solve their issues for them. And that's obviously carried over into the professional world.
Right.
Yeah. It's the funniest thing is during, if you're talking about at the end of the year with the goals and everything like that, it always astonishes me when I get told, well, but I did my job. Yeah, you did your job. That's what we pay you for. But we also put a goal in place, which is above and beyond what mm-hmm. you're being asked to do at your job. You know, it floors me that doesn't resonate with some people. Oh, he's quiet. Look at him.
I know he is. I'm liking this.
Rebecca.
I'm liking this.
How are so your world slightly different than Jen's, obviously, right? Yeah. It's a marketing world. It has a lot more fluff. Fluff's the wrong word, but it has a lot more
dust.
It has a lot. Yes. Rainbows and lollipops at times. Right. And as everybody believes they are a marketing professional in some way, shape or form, everybody can do it better than you in your role. Everybody inside that building that you guys work at says, oh no, you should take a picture like this. No, it should be that, this and that. And the other thing, how are you carving out your lane of expertise and helping get your team as well to be able to take ownership and accountability and responsibility for those areas that are typically very undefined? How are you navigating those experiences?
That's a very fun question, Brad. When I started at Super Products, they didn't have any marketing. So I was basically given carte blanche, like, figure this out. So with my years of experience in different places, I just started piecing it together. And I had the support of our president as I was doing it. And I'm very pragmatic and obviously very outspoken. And I definitely ruffled a lot of feathers when I came in. But I knew what I was saying and I knew it was right. So I fought the battles and I proved it out. Right now, yes, everyone thinks they can do marketing better. Everyone can offer better merch because merch is so much fun. I love merch. Merch is so much fun.
No, we need Yetis. No, we don't need Yetis because they're $85 a cup. Why are we giving away $85 cups?
Yeah. Well, how about a rain jacket? Oh, but we need kid options. Oh, we need this. We need, more sweatshirts. One with a hood, one without. One with really, like, it should be like this much of my job is merch. And at the end of the day, it should be going out to customers. And I want to give it cheap if it's going to be, but that's not quite how that works either. One thing I do at this point in time, because I have proven to be right on things that I'm going to argue with, is when I get into situations where I'm being challenged by my VPs on something and I say, all right, fine, whatever you guys want, I don't care. They then look at me and say, wait, what? You don't care? You have to care. That's not fun. Like, you need to fight us on this. Like, so again, like this brother relationship, they literally just want to give me a hard time most of the time so that I have to fight and argue it. Or there's like times about like picking where our booth should be within a trade show. And there's one specific I remember. They said, no, no one ever goes over there. We shouldn't be over there. And I'm like, we should be. They changed the flow of it. I built out my argument. They all said, no, we didn't do it. They came back to me during the show. You were right. We should have listened to you. And I'm like, mm-hmm. Next time, listen to me. Like, that's not your job. You guys should be selling trucks. Like, don't challenge me on certain things. Like, I'm not going to be outspoken about something I don't know about. And if I'm wrong, I'll admit I'm wrong all day. But I'm not going to be loud about something that I'm not confident is right.
So as you guys have gone through your careers, what, in your opinion, makes a great leader? And what should that be? How does that leadership characteristic that you guys feel is really important, how does that transcend generations?
You want to take that one first, Jen?
So I can, sure.
Go for it.
Empathetic to a point. I think leadership is a lot of listening. If you want to be a good leader, you need to listen.
So is listening and empathetic synonym? Are they synonymous or are they different?
I think they're different because it all depends upon what the conversation is and what's happening, right? So I can tell you that, you know, to a point when I say empathy to a point, because we are here to do a job, okay? We're here to run a business. But there's always a human aspect to it as well, both good and bad, okay? And I think you need to have your finger on that pulse. The other thing is being able to teach and mentor. I want to have somebody that works for me that can take my job if I get hit by a bus or if I advance. I'm not afraid of that. I want to have a bunch of people, at least one, that can do the things that I do so I don't get pigeonholed and nobody else in my group gets pigeonholed. I'm not afraid of something like that because I believe that you need to have succession plans for your people as well as yourself. Mm-hmm. And you need to build the good part of being a good leader is having a good cohesive team as well. And that's hard, especially when you start into a business. When you start into a business and you have a team that's not your, that you didn't build. When you build your own team, it's a lot easier. But dealing with things from the past, you know, that's a whole another set of being a leader. But building a good cohesive team and building on their strengths and really, you know, taking part. I also think part of leadership is you got to be boots on the ground with your folks. Sometimes you really do. I mean, if it's not one-on-ones, it's, hey, let's go take a walk. That's one of my biggest things is come walk with me out on the floor. Let me show you some stuff because we don't see everything sitting on a chair behind our computers.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's not where it happens. So
the other thing I'd add the other thing I'd add to what John was just saying is just supporting your team. So like if you're in meetings and your employee is speaking up or proposing something, that in that leadership role, like your job is to support your team. If you need to address something maybe that came up in that meeting that your employee said or did or should have done different, you have that conversation separately. But when you're in a group with other colleagues, other leaders, other subordinates, you let that conversation go and then you address any difficult conversation in private, but in public you praise and you support your team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That's also something that was, you know, I learned from Brad or that Brad really took to heart.
Aww.
You know, if you've got to have
all this love.
Oh, we're going to get to this section. We're going to get to the section that I'm waiting for.
Have a critical conversation or a crucial conversation with somebody, you need to have it with that person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's just being respectful. You know, I think also Becca might agree with me on this, but also being a good leader is knowing how to manage up. Sometimes people that we report to maybe don't get into the nitty gritty or don't quite understand.
Oh, I know you guys were doing shit that I didn't know about, or I didn't care about. It was okay. I didn't need to know. Just go make sure that nobody gets in trouble.
I managed the hell out of you and you know it.
I'm aware.
You didn't micromanage though, obviously. Like you're
I'm not talking about micromanage, but I'm talking about managing up. You know, if I've got, you know, if something isn't understood, then I'm gonna take the time and talk about the reasons and why things are. So
mm-hmm.
There was a lot of because my job as that leader was to insulate you from all the shit that Terry or Charlie or Tim or Andy or whoever had some stupid ass ideas of like, okay, great, here we go, or Agnew or whomever. It's like, okay, great, cool. Let me figure out how I'm going to filter this message so that the team just doesn't go apeshit and go, oh my God, and morale's shot to hell, even though mm-hmm. That's what they're talking about. It's like, no, we can't do that. So how do we insulate this?
And I still buffer a lot of, I think it's just the nature of the beast when you're in materials, but I buffer a lot to the people that work for me. And it's not that I don't think they can take it. It's that it's my responsibility and it doesn't need to fall on their shoulders, because ultimately, at the end of the day, they fail, I fail. So
I always approach being a leader and a manager as a coach. I mean, I grew up playing sports. I've coached. Like, that's how I look at it. It's my team. My job is to help teach the skill sets and tweak things that need to so they can perform together so that we all win together. Mm-hmm. And then as a coach, you don't tell your players all the different politics going on behind the scenes. They're just there to do their job. And so that's kind of what you have to do as a leader to your team. Make sure you take care of them.
Right. So this is what I'm dying to know. We're kind of at that point in the show where we need to talk about Bradisms. I'm sure you guys have plenty of Bradisms, you know, over the years. So what were some of the top things, I call them Bradisms, top things that he said or done that you kind of just like, let's go with the, all right, I see where you're going, but nah, we're going to do something different.
That never happened.
Never.
No.
What were some of those top ones you guys had?
Nothing stands out.
We didn't really.
I was.
Perfect. We didn't really spar very much. I probably sparred more with some people on your team, but more on like arguing the customer side of things. Mm-hmm. And even that, I don't think we ever. Maybe on the Caterpillar side. I mean, I have a very vivid memory on one of your bosses who said we weren't allowed to have a customer visit come in for an inspection of some equipment. And I told him he had no idea what he was talking about because he's from a different world. And you just kind of laughed. Because I said, just because we have a different name doesn't mean what we're doing in this manufacturing facility or how we treat our customers has changed.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that conversion was very challenging. Okay. Taking a very entrepreneurial organization and putting it into a very structured, process-driven organization was very interesting to go through.
Mm-hmm.
Blessed to do it for 5 years, but it was no regrets with it. But it was very different. I remember mm-hmm. sitting in a conference room going through parts planning and different things. And somebody that was there said, she goes, after you've been part of our organization for about 10 or 12 years, you'll understand how this works. I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah, if you get the yellow injection, you'll
it's like,
understand.
No. Hey, you know what? I don't care how many bolts you want to have, because if I don't have the $300,000 gear, you don't get to sell bolts with it. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my Bradisms are just Brad kind of sitting, processing, and kind of laughing to himself, kind of like he's done most of this call.
My Brad was the devil's advocate.
Yeah.
I'd come to him with a cat's ass, man. I thought I had everything lined up and ready to go. And I swear to God that he looked at that as a challenge and was like, have you thought of this?
Uh-huh.
So,
he still has that. So, but how much of that was opportunity to learn and how much of it was really risks associated with the reality of the situation that maybe you were not paying, that wasn't, from your viewpoint, you weren't looking at?
I think now it was probably, so look at, I think more it was things that I hadn't had the opportunity to learn yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you got me, I was a purchasing manager at Certified Power. And then I came into a subcontracting role in a union shop, and I'm a chick. So for as much as I thought I knew everything.
I thought you were
back
a witch.
To the pronouns. Hey, we're going back to those pronouns.
Wow, I thought you were a witch. I thought there was something with the broom, and I thought there was some other term or what.
I'm south. We're, you know, Becca's west and another coworker is east, and we're looking for north. So just put the feelers out there.
She's forming the coveted in my office.
Watch out.
I'm aware.
So,
but yes, it was learning opportunities. It wasn't trying to be the asshole. And I guess but there were some of those things though that within the team as it grew, I had to learn that being that quote unquote devil's advocate or the hey, what's wrong with this picture? Because I was a mismatch matcher. I could see what was wrong before I saw what was right. I needed to change my behaviors with certain individuals because it was like they were never going to come and ask questions because it was always raining on the parade.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. I didn't necessarily take it as you were raining on my parade. It's just...
Yes, she did.
At the time, you did. At the time, I did because I thought, you know, oh, you know, I got this. I this is you know, I know what I'm doing, but
you did 90% of it. You had dialed in. There's no doubt.
That's generous. I think
I would say that's very nice.
I would say that's very generous.
That's high praise.
Like I said, I went into a union shop where I had to go through some comments. I remember, I'll leave the name out, but I remember, you know,
please don't, because he might be a guest on the show soon.
No, not this one. I'm 100% sure. I came bound and
determined. That's probably who you were referring to originally, Brad.
No, I came bounding through the machine shop probably a couple weeks after I started, and a gentleman pulls me aside and says, so you're in subcontract? And yeah, you know, I'm all happy and everything. And said, so I saw one of our booms going down the road. You taking work out of here again? And I knew that the boom was going down the road to be stress relieved. And I remember telling him, well, seeing as our furnace is 65 feet long and our boom is 75 feet long, why don't you do the fucking math? And guess what? I never got picked on again.
I love it. I love that.
I will say I do miss Bucyrus. I do.
There was a period of awesomeness with many, many great people. And that,
yep.
And that has been dispersed across the land of many other opportunities for many different people. And it's awesome. So this is the part of the show that you get to have some fun. We get to have some fun. This is the bite your tongue segment of the show.
Yes.
Oh boy.
So Becca, any point in time, career, personal, professional, whatever, you get to choose the story where you may have, or you should have bit your tongue versus just going and making the statements that you did. And what did you learn from that opportunity?
So I need to tell the story.
You can.
You don't have to.
It'd be helpful to know. It makes it more fun.
So I think this would be my first job out of college. It was at an alternative dispute resolution office. And then we were, I know, into marketing, magical land. But it was a lot of like communication. Right. What I did. Anyways. There was a gal at the Ford Motor Company because we were handling Ford's warranty policies. We hated her. We hated dealing with her. Just she made life so difficult. Anywho, I wrote an email to my colleague, but accidentally sent it to her and said, this is why we hate this person. Like I forwarded her email and I'm like, and this is why we hate this person and da 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 da. And I sent it directly to her instead of my colleague.
Oops.
Yep.
And how much longer did you work there?
I maintained my employment, but I got on the phone and called her and apologized right away. Had a good coaching session with my boss. So he was good. He was just like, yeah. And again, we all felt that way about this particular person. But being my first job out of school, definitely a huge learning. Like, be careful what you put in writing because you never know. Like, who you're accidentally going to send it to or who's going to happen to see it because it can be forwarded on.
Correct. How about you, Jen?
Man, there's so many good ones.
Oh, I'm sure there are.
I guess I'll do a funny one. So this was second job. Yeah, still relatively new. And this is how to learn not to fish off the company pier. So started my job. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bad. Started my job and noticed that the one of the professionals that sat in our staff meeting was very good looking, so decided to date him. Nice rugby player, just awesome. Fell apart badly. So we would fight in production meetings.
Ooh.
Not good. But I did summons him and he ended up moving to Arizona. So it worked
out. You summoned him as part of the witchcraft?
I did. I said, you need to go. But what I'm getting at is just, nope, don't do it. Mm-mm.
Wow. All right. You got anything, Steve? Okay, good. Because I don't know how to top that. fishing off the company pier. So, yeah, let's just roll. I just want to thank Steve, for playing along with the roasting today. I appreciate that.
We were gentle.
I know you were. Yes, you were. And I appreciate that both from Becca and Jennifer to be kind. And I appreciate both of you very much and what you guys do for the manufacturing industry and how you improve that and keep it going and bring forward those great qualities of leadership that we all learned from our trainings and our workings together. I do appreciate that. And I appreciate you sharing your stories here on the Blue Collar BS podcast today. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
All right. Have a great day. We'll see you later.
All right. Thanks. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hey, this is okay. We're back.
No, we thought
we were gone, but we're back now. Becca's holding out on us.
Special edition.
Gen Z problem are we talking about here?
So last year, I hired a Gen Z employee.
At what age range roughly? Give us a older Gen Z, like younger, high school Gen Z.
Older Gen Z, like recently out of school.
Okay, so like that's kind of the middle of the road because they're 28 to 15 years old right now. So Gen Z.
Okay, so middle. Okay. A couple years professional experience. Yeah, she's the nightmare stories that you guys hear about, like these Gen Z kids. She oversold herself in the interview. She interviewed great. She did everything right.
She's in marketing, right?
In marketing, yep.
Okay.
I mean, she did great. She had the
duck face poses on her Insta site, like, hey.
Well, and it's fun that you say that because then after when you start stalking on social media, she didn't really know the difference between the different platforms. Like she put all her personal stuff on LinkedIn as well. So like the same thing she put on Facebook, like, or on Instagram, she put on LinkedIn too, which is weird because especially in the personal side, that's not what you do. But I mean, I generally work a hybrid schedule. When she was there, I was full-time in the office to bring her on board. No problem with it. I thought she was in a good spot. It turned disastrous quick. I mean, she sold herself as a graphic designer. I had a project I was working with her on. I asked her to send me a vector file, and she's like, what's that?
Can I just get that out of Canva?
Yeah. All she knew was Canva and a little bit of Photoshop. I mean, I gave her Adobe Illustrator files, and I said, just change the dates on here and the name on here. She recreated in Photoshop and then couldn't figure out how to export it into the version of the formats I needed. So that started to be some red flags for me. And I'm like, oh, hell, we're going into summer. I got to be back in the office all the time. Then I'm starting to hear that when I'm not there, she's in my office all the time. Okay, so she's hiding out in my office. Not that big of a deal, I guess. But then she's hiding, so she's not working and not talking to people, not doing anything, right? Mm-hmm. And then
like working from home.
Ha. I get more done at home than I do. You see her glass doors? It is like a revolving door when I'm in the office.
Yeah.
Because people want their merch. They want the right sweatshirt, the right glasses,
the crop tops and the flats.
Yeah, like. So I have a merch closet there. So I had to talk to my Gen Z employee about her hours because she's not working a full 40 hours. Had to have that conversation with her. She didn't like that. She didn't like that she had to actually work. So she's not knowing stuff. She's doing whatever. So I block out different times on my calendar just so I'm working on different stuff, right? So she starts freaking out that I'm going to replace her. And Jen and I had a lunch scheduled and I put it on our calendar for lunch because it was going to be a longer lunch because we were talking about stuff, right? Just work stuff, whatever else. She got herself worked up so much. She gave herself a migraine. She took the key to the closet, locked herself in the closet with the lights off, with the key in there, sends me a message. I have a migraine. I'm in the dark closet. I'm like, huh? You're what? Like you have a migraine, you go home. No. So I walk by the closet. I don't see her. So I'm like, what closet are you in? Like the door's locked. She's like, yeah, I have the key. I'm hiding in the corner so I don't get in trouble with HR.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Can't make this stuff up.
Not kidding. She's not. I mean, she's telling me this and I was like, what?
Yeah, red flags. And I've talked to a couple of my other like friends about stuff. They're like, well, did you write this person up yet? And I'm like, well, no, they haven't even been here 90 days. Right. So I'm like, this whole thing still, we're in this trial period. Right. So the Friday after I wrote her, or the Friday after I told her she had to work her full 40 hours, we were working on a graphic design. And again, as I mentioned, I have the coaching mentality. So I'm not trying to tell her exactly what to do, especially in a creative world, right? Like right. Maybe she's got a different thought. So like, if it's not laying out visually, I'm like kind of trying to coach her. I'm like, just look, it's right there. Like, just make a little tweak. Like what else do you see? She decided that was condescending, went out to her car, called her boyfriend, threw a fit, wrote up a resignation letter. Like, she just then ghosts me, like, from we're working on this project that's due. She just does not respond to me. Sends me a resignation letter basically saying I'm racist and homophobic. She goes to our IT guy, hands her computer and her phone, and says, here, I'm going to hit send and then I quit. He's like, hold on, you got to talk to HR. Like, that's not how this works. So then she went and interrupted one of her HR people who was actually on an interview, to which then she had to then take her to another HR person, to our HR manager. And kudos to her at that point. Our HR manager just let her talk. She's like, this is going to be bad. She took notes. I mean, she blew me up. I'm racist. I'm homophobic. All I do is talk about politics. All I do is talk about religion and all this stuff. Like, it's not me. I'm sure I have strong beliefs, but I'm not, I don't care what you believe. Just don't like be a jerk to me. Like, just be a good person. Right. Like, it's just, so I finally, 2 hours after I get this email, I finally get my HR manager calls me and tells me everything. And I'm like, oh my God, like, this is all lies. And then I'm like scratching my head, like, where is she even getting this from? So, you know, what conversation did we have, or did she overhear that she took and spun into something else? And then I had to schedule a meeting with my boss, our president, and our HR manager for first thing Monday morning, because I want to get ahead of this. Like, it's not me. It's a total character, like, it's just assassination, right? And anyone I've told this story to afterwards were like, really? You? Like, yeah, comments are made, but never. I'm not the one making those jokes or saying anything. Right. So there was a little bit. So I had the meeting with my boss and HR, had to explain some stuff, tried to figure out where some of these comments might have came from. There was an investigation. Like, they talked to Jen. They talked to some other people, like, who were around. Because I was like, you can talk to this person or that person. Like, this isn't. So luckily that kind of subsided. But honestly, I am convinced because that happened, I am not allowed to replace that position. And now I've still been a team of one doing like three people's job.
I really hope that's not the case, but I get it. I do, because it was bad.
So what did, terrible. So from both your perspectives, what have you learned through the potential interview process and or that 30, 60, 90 day window? What have you learned, or what can you do to improve and avoid a replication?
Well, I think some of it, you just never know who's walking through the door, right? Like,
yep.
We can absolutely ask better questions.
Shit, I had Jen walk through the door. Fuck, that was a mistake, right? I mean, come on.
It's your favorite.
One you marry.
But we can absolutely ask better questions, more example-based questions. I mean, for me, again, back to the whole graphic thing, like, I'm absolutely going to ask more questions around just, and it's simple graphic stuff. If you say you're a graphic designer, like, you know these things. So, like, for me, I would never ask that question, because most people aren't going to portray themselves as that. Or at least us old people won't, right? Like, these younger kids coming in, growing up with Canva and the different design tools, they might think that literally they are. Like, they may not think that they're lying about it, right? So it's just really trying to understand more. I mean, she gave me printed images. She told me where she posted all this stuff. Like, where, like, so she answered all the questions that one would have thought was needed. But I don't know. Again, at the end of the day, I still go back to, you just don't know who's walking through, no matter how many people sign off on things. Now, I will also tell you this. Our HR manager had red flags about this Gen Z during the interviews. I fought for her to be hired. A couple other people who interviewed fought for her to be hired. So HR had some red flags, but it was like vague red flags. But there was just something she caught that she was just, it wasn't settling. So that's been, taken into consideration with all interviews just moving forward as well.
Mm-hmm. That's why Jennifer didn't interview with anybody else.
Yeah. In the pants in
hell. It would have been like, abort, abort. Out of here. Here.
You want to do what? Do you want a pair? How much?
That's right, baby.
Oh, that's awesome.
No, I almost wish, I think, because not to Becca's degree, but, you know, I had a gentleman seem to know all the right answers to the questions, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm very transparent when I talk to people. I told them, I said, this position, it's a tough one. It's a tough group. They need a lot of leadership. They need, you know, someone to bring them together and stop the Wild West. Oh, yeah, yep. I asked for examples, and I don't know what we chased him out of here in, what, 3.5 months, maybe?
Did he make 3 months?
He just drove off. That was it. So, I was sitting here, and I'm watching him. It's 10 o'clock, and there he goes with his Mustang, and I'm like,
But he also wasn't Gen Z, though, was he?
Yes.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just some of it I wonder, too, is it the younger generations, or is it just post-COVID world that we live in where everyone's just crazy?
I don't know.
No, it's different, right? Mm-hmm. You got to be, and this is where manufacturing loses to a lot of other organizations, is because most manufacturing organizations aren't creating that sense of belonging, purpose, or community that mm-hmm. the younger generation, the Gen Z and some of the younger millennials want to be part of, right? So if it goes through Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that third level is where people want to be. It's not about the money. It's not about the stuff. It's do I have a sense of belonging? Do I have a sense of community? Do I have a purpose? And too often manufacturing organizations get too siloed, and then we have the fights over the wall where people are throwing grenades, and it's shitty, and it's a bad environment, and it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And you got marketing fighting with manufacturing, and manufacturing fighting with procurement fighting with executives, and sales teams going, fuck, nobody can do anything. And yada, yada, yada. And it's not cohesive, and it's not there. And, you know, when we went through that 04, 05, 06, 07, that 4-year period where we had really good people going through all those things, everything, we were able to have the arguments and come to a resolution and not take it personal and not be part of that, because everybody's on the same page. Everybody was cohesive for the greater good of what Tim was presenting and where we were all trying to go on that same mission, same vision. And too often manufacturing segregates that, right? I'm very confident that Jennifer, your targets and your goals for your department contradict those of the sales group and or manufacturing.
And that, yes. So the short answer is yes. And what drives me absolutely crazy is when you don't have that cohesiveness, then you've got the, I'm out for myself. I'm not, you know, screw your goals. I'm going to do mine. And in the long run, what happens is everybody loses, right? So one of the things, and I'll be selfish here, but one of the things that I wanted everybody to have on their goals this year, and I mean everybody, was inventory accuracy. And I can point it towards it being a good thing for every segment of this manufacturing, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're not overbuying.
Right.
We have the right product when we need it, right? Mm-hmm. We're able to sell the trucks that we need to sell. We're mm-hmm. making the appropriate turns, you know, mm-hmm. and to have anybody, I mean, just tell you, well, that's not my problem. That's the material's problem. You deal with that. Well, okay. We'll have a conversation.
Well, and that inventory, all that does is chew up capital, which means you can't do other things. You can't do R&D. You can't hire another marketing person. You can't go to the show. You can't because the cash is all tied up on shit on the shelves that nobody knows that it's there.
Yep.
Right. I mean, I recall when we first started, some of our international sourcing in Rohit came with a gearing program out of South Korea, and he had this massive, massive cost reduction. And he was going to make his goal and make his target. But from the product group perspective, I'm like, no, I'm not going to take that risk. We're 0-27 on gearing from new sources. I'm not willing to do it. I'm willing to say to have that conversation with his boss, say, great. He brought the idea. He brought the $300,000, $400,000 of cost savings. just because I said no, he shouldn't be penalized for the opportunity, right? I'm like, mm-hmm. no, you, from my perspective, you met your goal. Just because it didn't actually materialize, you still met your goal. And that is not conversations most people are willing to have.
The other thing too, that, and it's a tough conversation. Well, the other thing too is, you know, if you're, it depends on your background. I think a lot of times people in purchasing get a bad rap, and maybe rightfully so. If they don't.
Yeah, rightfully so. Rightfully so.
Because we're all demons, right? You know, right to the core. But if you don't have a planning background and you don't understand manufacturing and manufacturability, you can get all the cost savings in the world. And I send a gear out to the shop floor. It's a piece of shit. And it takes the guys 2 extra hours to fit it into a blower. Mm-hmm. I've lost all cost savings and I've made it harder out on the floor.
Total cost acquisition.
That's why you can't just wipe your hands of it. You have to look at.
But you got it for $4 less, Jen. It's okay.
No, I'm not buying that because if it's harder out of the shop, we're still spending money. And that's the problem because a lot of the other.
You learn well, Grasshopper.
I know. A lot of the other purchasing people that I've talked to do it that way because they see it as not their problem. So.
Yep. Here's a drunk text. Here's a drunk text I received from Jen many months ago.
See, we have so much content. We talk for hours.
You taught me more than any class or book I ever read. You also took time to care when things were horrible. Now deflate your head and go have a good night.
Yeah. Rough environment at times at Bucyrus. We had internal folks that didn't quite realize what we were doing either. So
that was on purpose.
I know some of it was on purpose.
Strategically designed.
There was many reasons why that's our subcontract group remained as segregated from general purchasing as we could make it.
He kept us in the basement. Literally. No, I take that back. I started in the fishbowl. No one was out there. 1970s furniture that you could get tetanus or you could get cuts from.
Quit your whining.
Good luck.
And look survive? How well you turned out.
Did you survive?
I mean, it got you gritty. It made you gritty.
Do you think if you couldn't handle it, I would have done that to you?
No.
Right. Think about the young. I can't remember the dude's name, but the guy that was military and he only lasted the 2 years or 3 years. Younger kid that was a military guy that came in and started in the purchasing group and wanted to do his. He did bug spraying and different things, and he had his own business aspirations. I can't remember the kid's name, but that's
either. But I know he. Yeah, I remember.
He was back in the one corner pod and like, okay, dude, you know, here's. You want to have your own business. That's great. Let's go. But the things I'm trying to teach you here are things that are going to help you with your business. So let's get your shit together and let's move forward here. Not just not do your job because that's a problem.
Right.
Yeah. But I have aspirations.
So awesome. That's awesome. Part two. That was fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Blue Collar BS, brought to you by Vision Forward Business Solutions and Professional Business Coaching, Inc. If you'd like to learn more on today's topic, just reach out to Steve Doyle or myself, Brad Herta. Please like, share, rate, and review this show, as feedback is the only way we can get better. Let's keep blue-collar businesses strong for generations to come.